morning, everyone. It's good to be here with all of you today. This morning, we are continuing on into Ephesians chapter 5, where Paul is instructing us on how we are to live in response of everything that God has done in Ephesians chapters 1 through 3. Ephesians chapter 5, starting at verse 1. Therefore, because of everything that he's done, be imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. So here we have our third reminder of how we are to walk given our status as God's children. We once walked according to the ways of the world, the power of the prince in the air. We were once sons of disobedience. That's all in chapter 2, verse 2. But now we've taken on a new family name, being adopted into God's family, and we are to take on the new family's way of life. Just as Cal, before he was adopted, was destined to be much like his original family, I am just sure that being adopted by Stuart and Sharon, he's kind of taken on some of the family eccentricities. And so now God is saying, that is what we need to do with our new family. Just as children imitate their parents, we are told to imitate God, follow his patterns and his behaviors. In 2015, there was a Kenyan athlete by the name of Julius Yego, and he won the gold medal in the javelin throw in the 2015 Beijing Olympics. And as impressive as that is just on its own, what really made this man incredible in the eyes of so many is that he didn't have a coach. You want to know how he learned how to throw the javelin at the gold medal level? He watched YouTube videos. The internet's not a complete waste. You can apparently learn how to be an Olympic athlete through YouTube videos. What he would do is he would just take all of the Olympic gold medalists from the previous years and just watch them on repeat. And he would imitate them, he would practice, he would use them as his role model and went on to become an Olympic champion. Paul says, that is what we need to do. And our role model is not in throwing javelins. Our role model is nothing less than Christ himself. The perfect image of God, the kind of son or daughter that God says, why can't you be more like your brother, right? That is what we are all aspiring to be. The love that he showed by giving himself for us is the love that we are to imitate. A sacrificial love that puts self at the bottom, washing feet, being buried 6 feet under. That's the love of Christ. That's the love we are to imitate. And that God says, or excuse me, Paul says, that is what makes us acceptable to God. That is the fragrant offering, the sacrifice to God, that in the Old Testament, whenever a sacrifice was well-pleasing, that means it was accepted by God. And so, in imitating this love of Christ, Paul is also quick to point out the kind of loves that we should not be imitating. Loves that are not about self-giving, loves that don't please God. Just as it's useful to see the proper model of how to do something like throw a javelin, it's also useful to see all the common mistakes so that we can identify them in ourselves. Here's the love we shouldn't have. In verse 3, but sexual immorality and all impurity or covetousness must not even be named among you as is proper among the saints. Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead, let there be thanksgiving. For you may be sure of this, that everyone who is sexually immoral or impure or who is covetous, that is, an idolater, has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. So we have three sins mentioned in 5:3 and 5:5. They're mentioned twice. Sexual immorality, impurity, covetousness. Sexual immorality would be any kind of sexual relationship outside the boundaries of a godly marriage. Sex before marriage, adultery, pornography, prostitution, homosexuality, anything that doesn't involve your spouse ain't going to happen in God's eyes. And then we have the next one, impurity. Impurity is just anything that is dirty. Just as we talk about someone with a dirty mind, impurity is often paired with sexual immorality. And if we're talking about behaviors, this one, for many of us, is a little harder to define. We know what sex is, but what is impure behavior? In researching, I discovered it's better if we simply asked, what is pure behavior? Are the things that you do with your boyfriend, girlfriend, with someone who's not your spouse, is that pure behavior? And if it's going to give us pause, if it's something that you're not going to be comfortable doing in front of other people, we really have to question if that is a pure action. And then third, we have covetousness, also translated as greed in many versions. It's simply the desire for something that you have no right to. And while it can often talk about the greed for money or possessions, in Greek literature, it's also often paired with sexual sins. It is coveting a person that you have no right to. And so these three sins all together, in the eyes of God, according to verse 5, nothing short of an idolater. Because for too many people who practice these sins, it is an all-encompassing passion that is pursued above all else, valued above all else. It is putting the love of the creation, the body, above the love of the Creator and bowing down to the image of men and of women. And Paul says in verse 4, matching the three sins of sexual immorality, impurity, and coveting, we have three types of speech that are to be avoided: filthiness, foolish talk, crude joking. And what makes our talk filthy, foolish, and crude is their content. Nowhere in the Bible, much to many parents' dismay, do we have a long list of no-no words. There are plenty of no-no words, and I'm not saying that just because the Bible doesn't say we can't say it, mean we should say it. Don't go there. We're not saying that. What makes a word, what makes our talk filthy, crude, foolish, is what we mean by them and what we are talking about. Seeing as that these three ways of talking are bracketed by sexual immorality, impurity, and covetousness, I think we need to define all of this by sexually charged language and joking. Dirty jokes, innuendo, suggestive language. Instead of looking at and talking about these things that we can't have, that lead us to sin, that inspire dirty thoughts, Paul says the solution in verse 4 is instead there needs to be thanksgiving. There needs to be a grateful heart for what God has done, for what God has given us. Just as Paul talks about idolatry being an exchange of the creation for the Creator in Romans chapter 1, and how this sexual immorality is an exchange of man for God, idolatry also stems from just being unthankful. Romans chapter 1, verse 21, Paul says that although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. And that unthankfulness inevitably leads into the great exchange, creation for the Creator. And so if we're not thanking God for the fulfillment that we can have with our marriages exclusively, or if we're not finding fulfillment in anything outside of a sexual relationship, Paul says we are on the road to an idolatrous lifestyle, sacrificing the inheritance that God has given us for cheap flings and X-rated films. Don't be deceived by these false loves, Paul says. And believe me, people are going to try and deceive us into thinking that these things, this impurity, this sexual immorality, are totally fine, totally cool with God. Paul says, let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. So much sexual immorality, unfortunately, is framed and promoted as love. What's the slogan behind homosexuality? Love is love. And you should respect it and embrace it, regardless of the gender or anything else involved in that. Love is love. Even the polite way of referring to sex, making love, is how we like to phrase it. But have you noticed that in the use of those slogans and those phrases that we're equating sex with love? I have nothing against two men who genuinely love each other. I do have a problem when they want to commit sexual immorality with each other. And if we want to say making love is the polite way of saying sex, then we're simply saying that love is sex. And if your idea of love is only sex, then you have a really messed up view of what love is. If your love of another is solely dependent on you having access to their body for your own pleasure, it is not love. It's more of a love in line with what Paul talks about in 2 Timothy 3. He says that people will be lovers of self, lovers of money. And then he goes through a long list of sins, wrapping up in verse 4, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, and having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people. Love is not just an inherently good thing. If you love kicking puppies, you got something wrong up there. Lovers of pleasure, lovers of self, lovers of money, that's not the love that God is after. But so many people will try to deceive you into thinking that the sins of sexual immorality, impurity, and greed, they're just forms of love. And since God is love, everything they call is love is okay. Appearance of godliness, but none of its power. And there are plenty of other ways that people try to deceive us into rationalizing these sexual immoralities into something harmless. Some people feel that they're owed a physical relationship. God wants me to be happy. He wants me to find fulfillment. And if I'm not finding it in my marriage, then I have a license to find it somewhere else. Other people will say, well, it's a victimless crime, right? You go online, you watch pornography. They're the ones who willingly put it up there. No harm, no foul, right? Others would say, well, this is a very private sin. So as long as nobody finds out, ignorance is bliss. It's natural. We're getting married anyways. It's a sin that God has to forgive me of. Jesus dined with prostitutes. Haven't you read that? I was even shocked in studying this passage. One guy who normally is so on the point, I found out, is a Calvinist. Once saved, always saved. So if you practice these sins, you lose your inheritance, which doesn't mean you're going to hell. It simply means that your version of heaven isn't going to be as good as everybody else's. You can be a sexually immoral person, an idolater, and still go to heaven. And people will find all sorts of ways to deceive you into thinking that these things are totally cool. But as much as we want these things to be okay, Paul is very clear that the wrath of God comes upon the people who practice these things. Now, that picture doesn't sit well with some people. It strikes a lot of people as arbitrary. What does God care about what I do with my body? Why does he get so mad about it anyways? Well, let's remember what Paul is discussing overall here. We are, in not doing these things, learning how to imitate God, right? He is giving us the negative picture of love so that we know if our love looks like this, we're doing it wrong. Let's jump ahead a little bit to Ephesians chapter 5, verses 31 through 32. As Paul talks about what a proper marriage relationship is, what love between man and a woman needs to look like, he quotes from Genesis. And he says, therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. So at the end of Paul's thoughts on marriage and what a wife and husband need to look like and how they are to relate to each other, he drops this quote from Genesis on us. After God gave Adam and Eve to each other, we're told the two became one flesh. I'm going to get over this cough one day. The old family, in becoming one flesh, that's left behind. The new family is formed. I'm sorry, Blake is not part of your family anymore. He has started his own with Anna Claire. The two have become their own flesh. And Paul says that is what happens with Christ and the church. We were sons of disobedience. We were following our father, the prince of the power of the air, the devil. But now we are part of this new family, a new flesh made one with Christ. So our marriages, Paul is saying in Ephesians 5, 31, 32, our marriages are to be pictures of the incredible love, care, and faithfulness that God has shown for us. When people say, how do I know the love of God? Point out a really good marriage to them. No matter what happens in that marriage, those two are staying faithful to each other. That is the kind of love that God has for us. So, does casual sex, adultery, pornography, lusting after everyone but your spouse, does that remind you of God's commitment to you? When you see people committing those sins, do you think, well, wow, isn't God great? Does that remind you of his character? Does it remind us of the love that Jesus showed by giving himself on the cross? Or does adultery simply remind you of how faithless people are, putting desires above people? Doesn't lust simply show an attitude of never being content with what God has given us? Doesn't casual sex show a worship of your own body above the will of God? How can we expect to see the sacrificial and selfless love of God on the cross on our behalf when the only love that we have is for our own pleasure, our own bodies, for sex? If that's the love we want, we're not imitating God. And don't let anyone deceive you. If your highest expression of love is found in sexual immorality, if you are not just struggling with these sins, but actively giving into them, enjoying them, the wrath of God is coming down on that. You are not going to go to heaven, but with a few less rewards, you are going to go to hell. That is how serious these sins are. And so, now that we have this negative picture, this false love out of the way, he wants to also tell us, okay, there's the bad picture. Here's some positive, though. He told us in Ephesians 5:1 to walk as beloved children of God. He continues on in verse 7, therefore, do not become partners with them. For at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of light is found in all that is good and right and true, and try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. So Paul here is not just focusing that we are no longer darkness and thus don't walk down that old way. It's about our new way of walking, in a way that's good and right and true. Abstaining from the old path does not mean that we are walking on the good path now. We cannot simply abstain from sin and say, I am a children of light. We need to actively pursue what being a child of light actually means. We need to walk in a way that is good and true and right in the eyes of God. As children of light, we are to be walking in such a way that we expose the darkness for what it actually is. Ephesians 5:11 and 12. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things they do in secret. Now, it's easy to do a real quick and casual read of this passage and come away feeling a little weird. We have to expose these things. And exposing people just kind of seems weird. I've heard of elders who, if you invited them over to your house, they would go through your stuff because they were wanting to expose the deeds of darkness. And so some people, it's like, okay, we got to launch a crusade. We got to start that Spanish Inquisition that nobody ever expects. We got to just go out there and start exposing, wagging those fingers at everybody. Take a closer look, though. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. Them is not just the sinners. Expose the works themselves. That is what we are to expose, the deeds. Our purpose in walking as children of light and in love is to expose all of the false concepts of love and sins for what they actually are. We need to expose their concept of love for what it is, an obsession with pleasure and the body. We need to expose the idols that are behind those loves. We need to expose whatever works that are contrary to God and show them that this is not the way you want to go. This is the way that is unfruitful. It is the way that leads to death. You think these works are loving and righteous and great? We as children of light need to show that is not at all where those paths lead you. And again, we shouldn't just be doing this by going around wagging the finger at those who are outside of the church. We can expose the false ways of love by shining as light, by showing them the ideal love that is Jesus. Just like when you hold up a counterfeit bill up next to an authentic one, all the differences start standing out. We are to hold up God's love, exposing theirs as counterfeits, not just giving them an alternative love, but an authentic one. This is what love actually is, a self-giving, sacrificial love that doesn't wonder if someone is worthy of being loved before being shown. It's a love that adopts children of wrath. It's a love that shows mercy on those who are dead in their sins and trespasses. It's a love that brings enemies near and makes peace. A love that will suffer for the sake of the beloved. A love that is given purely as a gift. Not because anyone is especially lovely, but because God is loving. Those are all the ways that God has loved us. As God has walked and shown in our lives, we are to walk and shine in the lives of everybody else. So we're not exposing people to shame or mock or drive them away. We are exposing the false loves of this world and showing that really they're inadequate. You call this love? No. Let me show you the love of God. Now we're talking about love. We are exposing false loves as an act of love so that we can bring people into the great love of Christ. Paul goes on in verse 13. That when anything is exposed to the light, it becomes visible. For anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore, it says, "Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you." When the dark deed is exposed, shown as unfruitful, shown as a fraud, it becomes visible, it becomes light. In other words, this is what I think Paul is trying to get at with this verse here. He's saying that when we shine the light of God that's in our lives, people are going to finally be able to take a critical look at their own conduct. They're going to be able to take a critical look at what they call love, see that it doesn't measure up to what God has in store for them, and thus switch paths, be baptized, become children of light. Therefore, it says, "Awake, O sleeper, arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you." We don't know precisely what Paul is quoting from here in verse 14, most people think that he is kind of condensing down Isaiah chapter 60, verses 1 through 3, where God says, "Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For behold, darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will be seen upon you. And nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising." Darkness covers the earth, but God is shining in our lives so that we might shine on others, that they might have their dark deeds exposed, they might see just how awful they truly are, and see that there's a better way. And thus become light themselves. Those who were dead, but now because of God, can live. That's the love that God wants us to have. That's the love that God wants us to show. And so as we go throughout this week, the application is very simple. In what ways can I give? In what ways can I sacrifice myself, not just for people that I like, but for the people that I don't like? How can I imitate Jesus by showing them this is what love truly looks like? If there's any way that we can help you have a better understanding of God's love, why don't you come forward so we stand and sing a word of encouragement?